Now, according to the conference leaflet and the chairman, I am to speak about the Lord's self-portraits. But actually, I'm only going to speak about one of them. I am the light of the world. But I will say a few words about the others. I believe that there are 8 in John's Gospel. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. Before Abraham was, I am. And there are a number in the book of the Revelation. I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the root and the offspring of David. I am the bright and morning star. Well, what shall we say about these sayings? In John chapter 7, you read that the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to arrest Jesus, but they came back without him. And when they were asked why they hadn't brought him, they said, "No man ever spoke like this man." And that is certainly true of these sayings. Take one of them, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Great teachers have sought to teach the way. But Jesus said he was the way. Great teachers have tried to learn the truth. But Jesus said he was the truth. Great teachers have tried to unravel the mystery of life. But Jesus said he was the life. Yes, I believe we've been speaking much about the deity of our Lord. I believe that these sayings are among the great proofs of the deity of Christ. For no man ever spoke like this man. But let us look at the saying, "I am the light of the world." It's said of Alfred Tennyson, the well-known poet, that once he was standing before a rose bed in a garden, and an unbelieving friend asked him what Jesus really meant to him. And he said, "What the sun means to these roses. If the sun ceased to shine, the roses would soon be dead and their fragrance and beauty would all be gone. And what the sun is to the roses, Christ is to those who believe in him." Now you read of the appearing of the natural light of the world in Genesis chapter 1. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And you read of the appearing of the spiritual light of the world in John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And 22 times in John's Gospel you read of the light, and 7 times you read of darkness. And there are 2 places in John's Gospel where Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." The first is in chapter 8, verse 12. It reads like this: "Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, 'I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life.'" Jesus spoke to them again. Verse 2 says, "Early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. But there was an interruption. The Pharisees brought to him a woman taken in adultery." And John relates the story, which shows the heartlessness of the Pharisees and the love of Jesus. But the woman's gone now, and he speaks to the people in the temple again. "I am the light of the world." The I is emphatic. In the Old Testament, God was the light of his people. In John's first epistle, God is light. But Jesus says, "I am the light," for he was God. Also in the Old Testament, the Messiah was to be a light. Isaiah 49:6 says of God's servant, "I will also give you as a light to the Gentiles, that you should be my salvation to the ends of the earth." Jesus was the light of the world because he was God. And he was the light of the world because he was the Messiah. And notice, he's the light of the world. Of the world. Not of the Jews only, but of the world. What does the Great Commission say in Mark 16:15? It says, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. But that's often been forgotten. You may have heard the story of William Carey, who is known as the father of modern missions. He was a cobbler, but he longed to do something to help send the good news to those who sat in heathen darkness. And one day at a meeting of ministers, he was bold enough to suggest that consideration should be given to the question of obeying the Master's last command. But a stern voice said, young man, sit down. When God pleases to convert the heathen, he will do it without your aid or mine. Carey sat down. But 5 years later, he preached a great sermon based on Isaiah 54:2-3. And he had 2 points. Expect great things from God and attempt great things for God. The result was the formation of the first modern missionary society. And Carey went to India in 1793. And he was there for 40 years, telling the people that Christ was the light of the world. Not the light of England only, but the light of the world. Or you may have heard of Hudson Taylor's burden for China. In Scotland, he said, with its population of 4 millions, several thousand ministers were needed to care for the spiritual interests of people already flooded with the gospel. But China, with 100 times as many precious immortal souls, had not even one Protestant missionary on an average to every 4 millions. But Christ is not only the light of Scotland, he's the light of China. He's the light of the world. And so it goes on. Today, missiologists, they are people who study missions, they talk about the 1040 window. The 1040 window. A vast area going round the African and Asian continents, where there are 1.3 billion people who've never heard of Christ. But Christ should be the light of that window. And we should pray that the Lord of the harvest may send forth laborers into that window. But let us come back to our text. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness. He doesn't say simply he who believes in me, but he who follows me. And following Jesus can be a costly thing. You remember in Matthew 8:19, you read of a certain scribe who came and said, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. But Jesus said to him, Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Again in Luke 9:23, Jesus said to them, If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. In Luke 5:11, you read of the apostles, that they forsook all and followed him. Now, I think that the assemblies have been very strong on the gospel. Nothing in my hand I bring. Nothing that we have to do. Nothing in my hand I bring. Simply to thy cross I cling. And that's true, and it's good, and it's beautiful. But I don't think we've been so strong on following him. There's a little hymn we sometimes sing, I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. The world behind me, the cross before me. No turning back, no turning back. In the next verse says, though none go with me, I still will follow. No turning back, no turning back. Very good. But a lady said to me recently, it sounds a little bit like Peter, doesn't it? Sounds a little bit like Peter. Though none go with me, I'll still follow. You remember what he said? Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I won't be made to stumble. But he did stumble. He denied the Lord. By all means, let us decide to follow Jesus. But let us not do it in our own strength. For we might do what Peter did. We might fail to follow. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness. Now, what's meant by darkness? What sort of darkness? I suggest he means the darkness of ignorance and the darkness of sin. You have the darkness of ignorance in the previous chapter. In verse 5, it says, even his brothers did not believe in him. Verse 12, some said, he deceives the people. Verse 20, the people said, you have a demon. Verse 27, some said, we know where this man is from, but when the Christ comes, no one knows where he's from. They were in the darkness of ignorance. And how many people in the world today are like that? They're in the darkness of ignorance. They know almost nothing about Christ. I recently read a book, some of you may have read it, called Death of a Guru. A fascinating book, but also a very sad book, because it reveals the almost total ignorance of the Hindus concerning Christ. But that doesn't only apply to the Hindus and the Muslims. It applies, I believe, to a large proportion of our own population. And we should do all we can to make Christ known so that people do not walk in the darkness of ignorance. But then there's the darkness of sin. And you have that in John 8, in the story of the woman taken in adultery that I've mentioned. And even more in that story, in the hypocrisy of the scribes and Pharisees. I believe they were more sinful than the woman, deceitful and sinful and heartless. The Lord's last words to the woman were, go and sin no more, go and sin no more. Walk in the darkness of sin no more. And in the New Testament, sin is often linked with darkness. Take Romans 13, 12 and 14. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armour of light. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfil its lusts. And I think it would be a good thing if in the closing minutes of this conference we would all examine our hearts and lives and ask, is there a work of darkness that I'm allowing in my life? It may be something quite sinful. We know it's sinful, but we persist in doing it. It may be something in our relation with others. 1 John 2 says, he who says he's in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light. There's no cause for stumbling in him. And he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness. Recently, a missionary told us of two missionaries who lived 50 yards apart and they never spoke to each other. Missionaries, but living in darkness. But Jesus said, he who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Now, what's meant by that? What's meant by having the light of life? Now, J.C. Ryle, a very spiritual commentator, expressed it like this, much better than I could express it, so I'll just read it. This is how he put it. The light of life. This expression means, he shall possess living light. He shall have spiritual light, as much superior to the light of any lamp, or even of the sun, as the living water offered to the Samaritan woman was superior to the water of Jacob's well. The spiritual light that Christ gives is independent of time or place, is not affected by sickness or death, burns on forever, and cannot be quenched. He that has it shall feel light within his mind, heart, and conscience, shall see light before him on the grave, death, and the world to come, shall have light shining around him, guiding him in his journey through life, and shall reflect light in his conduct, ways, and conversation. I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that the words, I am the light of the world, are found twice in John's Gospel, in chapter 8 and then in chapter 9. In chapter 9, 5, Jesus says, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. The setting is different from chapter 8. Now, most of you are familiar with the story, so I'll only look at it briefly. There was a man blind from birth, and Jesus anointed the man's eyes with clay and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. So he went and washed and came back seeing. So Jesus showed that he was the light of the world by giving sight to those blind eyes. The man was not only blind physically, he was also blind spiritually. In an argument with the Pharisees concerning Jesus, he said, whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know. But one thing I know, though I was blind, now I see. He was surely blind spiritually, or he wouldn't have said that he didn't know if Jesus was a sinner or not. But in the last part of the chapter, Jesus gives sight to his spiritual eyes. The Jews cast him out. And it says that Jesus heard that they had cast him out. When he found him, he said to him, do you believe on the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord? That I might believe in him. Jesus said to him, you've both seen him. He that talks with you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. So Jesus showed he was the light of the world by giving this man his sight physically and spiritually. I can remember about 70 years ago, we lived in Cessnock. And one night I went down the town to the main street, and the Salvation Army was singing and playing in the main street. They sang a number of hymns, but one made an impression that I've never forgotten. You might guess what it was. The whole world was lost in the darkness of sin. The light of the world is Jesus. Like sunshine at noonday, his glory shone in. The light of the world is Jesus. No darkness of we who in Jesus abide. The light of the world is Jesus. We walk in the light when we follow our guide. The light of the world is Jesus. He dwells in darkness with sin-blinded eyes. The light of the world is Jesus. Go wash in his bidding and light will arise. The light of the world is Jesus. No need of the sun in heaven, we're told. The light of the world is Jesus. The Lamb is the light in the city of gold. The light of the world is Jesus. Come to the light, is shining for thee. Sweetly the light has dawned upon me. Once I was blind, but now I can see. The light of the world is Jesus. And after all those years, in my mind's eye, I can still see and hear that little band singing and playing that hymn. Now, I'd like to stop there. Perhaps you would like me to also. But there's something else in John 9 and 5 that I must mention. In our English versions, the words, I am the light of the world, in John 8 and John 9, are exactly the same. But they're not quite the same. In the original, they're not quite the same. As I said earlier, in chapter 8, the I is emphatic. I, the Son of God, the Messiah, are the light of the world. And he's still the light of the world through the Word and the Spirit. He hasn't ceased to be the light of the world. But there's no emphatic I in chapter 9. He's speaking of showing the light personally. But a day would come when he would be no longer in the world personally. And he could no longer show the light personally. So he said, as long as I am in the world, I'm the light of the world. And it's now our privilege and duty to be the light of the world. You remember Matthew 5:14? The Lord speaking said, you are the light of the world. Then verse 16, that your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. You notice he doesn't say anything here about our words, but about our works. Now, our words are important, but they're of little value apart from our works. At our men's conference, one speaker said, "Australians don't listen to you, but they watch you." And the American writer Emerson said, "Your actions speak so loudly that I can't hear what you're saying." You've heard of Gandhi, the great Indian leader. He once said, "If only 5% of Indian Christians had taken Christ as a model, I would be a Christian." You'd probably have said the same about Australian Christians. Perhaps he was a little bit hard. Perhaps he was a bit too hard. But as a young man, Gandhi had some very unfortunate experiences. He was living in South Africa, supposedly a Christian country. He was friendly with C.F. Andrews, a well-known preacher who had been a missionary in India. And one day he went to a church I can hardly say this without emotion. He went to a church to hear C.F. Andrews preach. But he wasn't allowed to go in. He wasn't allowed to go in because of his race and colour. On another occasion, he boarded an overnight train with a first-class ticket. A white man got on the train and got two officials to ask him to leave. But Gandhi refused. So they threw him out. And years later, he said, it was that incident that caused him to devote his life to fighting colour prejudice. But supposing that white man in the train had been a true Christian who welcomed Gandhi lovingly and had a loving talk with him. Supposing that when he went to hear C.F. Andrews, he had been treated lovingly. Is it too much to think that he might have become a Christian and gone back to India as an ambassador for Christ? And if that had happened, what might have been the result? You're the light of the world. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So the words, "the light of the world," have a double meaning, a double application. First, Jesus is the light of the world. That calls for our adoration. Secondly, we are the light of the world, and that calls for our consecration. A missionary was once preaching in a remote part of China. He told the story of Jesus, how loving he was, how he went about doing good and healing the sick, and he was interrupted by a member of the audience who said, "Yes, we know him. He used to live here."